welcome to the Feverbee podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm head of training here at Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Feverbee podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and review our show notes to get all of the resources mentioned in the podcast today. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. Today, I am so excited to introduce you to Kevin W. Grossman. Kevin co-founded and co-hosts the highly popular weekly Talent Culture T-Chat show with Megan M. Bureau. He's also currently the product marketing director for Total Talent Acquisition Products at PeopleFluent. A certified talent acquisition strategist and human capital strategist, Kevin has over 15 years of domain expertise and familiarity with the HR and recruiting technology marketplace, and remains a top social influencer in leadership, human resources, talent management, and recruiting. He's an active CNE council member for Talent Board's Candidate Experience Awards and has been a prolific HR business blogger and writer since 2004. His first business book, titled Tech Job Hunt Handbook, was released in December 2012 from A-Press. So, Kevin, thank you so much for your time for joining me today. I'm so excited to have you here.
Katie, it's a pleasure. It's so great to connect with you again after all this time, and though we've been connected online, but right. I'm so excited to be doing the show with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Good. Absolutely. Well, as I just briefly mentioned, I love T-Chat. I've been a fan almost since the very beginning, really since I first met you and Megan back in 2011. And so I just thought once I started hosting the podcast, actually, you have always been someone in my mind that I've wanted to get on the show at some point. So I'm just very excited it's finally here.
Excellent. Me too.
So to get us started, I would love it if you could tell everyone a little bit more about T-Chat, what it is, how the idea came to be, and all of that good stuff.
I would love to do that. So back in the spring of 2010, which seems like a gazillion years ago now, but it's not that long ago, I met Megan online, Twitter, of all places, which would make sense. And we were just, you know, this is early. I mean, for most of the world, or those that were early adopters, it was still early times then. So we were experimenting with the different social platforms and had been since, you know, 2007, 2008. But we met online on Twitter. We began talking to one another, connected on other forums, talked on the phone, had kind of similar synergies in regards to what she was trying to do with a blogging community on her Talent Culture site, which I thought, absolutely. And I, you know, was a blogger, had been a blogger for a long time already. And so we just kind of joined forces, and we had other folks at the time working with us in that community as well. And she had already launched her consulting services on talentculture.com. But long story short, we did this, the blogging thing, for a few months. And then early in the fall of 2010, I had begun seeing these things called Twitter chats that were popping up in our space, in what I'll call the HR recruiting workplace space, and for lack of a better name, but you know what I'm talking about. It's just the broader world of workspaces, we call it, with T-Chat. Anyway, they weren't completely new, but they were really new to our space. And I noticed a couple here and there, and I thought, you know, we should experiment with this. We've got a lot of people that we follow and follow us on Twitter. And so we launched in November, actually November 16th, 2010. I never forget the date. And the show was about emotional intelligence in the work. And it was actually in the workplace. And it was fun. And so we did this hour Twitter chat, not really knowing exactly what we were doing. And we had a series of questions that we shot out to the community, and people bantered back and shared, networked, and learned from one another. And that's where it started. And lo and behold, it's almost, we're over 4.5 years later and still doing it.
That's just, it's absolutely incredible. And I love to just see, you know, every week I still see the T-Chats. I'm not as active, admittedly, in the T-Chat community as I was before, but it's so fantastic. I get very nostalgic every week when I see it pop through my feed. Is it on Tuesdays or Wednesdays now?
It's on Wednesdays. Now. Okay. Yeah, we're actually getting ready to switch. We're not switching days, so it's Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Mm. We are going to actually pull up and do it earlier in the day, in starting April 22nd. It'll go from 1 to 2 Eastern, and we wanted to do that to kind of grow the community with a broader European audience as well, which we've had some requests to do. Then it was time to kind of, for a little bit of a change. The day will remain the same.
Right.
But for those, I mean, and you just to anticipate what you're going to ask me too, about the fact that it's not all Twitter chat anymore either. There's a 30-minute block that's an internet radio show with guests first. Then the guests join us on a 30-minute Twitter chat, and it's all part of the same show now, which is fun.
Oh, that sounds really fun.
It is.
So I guess on that note, especially around Twitter, I mean, Twitter has always been a very central piece to T-Chat, if anything, that's like the central piece. And I know the radio show, you guys have Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
And so it's really great that you tie it in. But have you ever at any point considered, you know, moving platforms or creating like your own branded T-Chat space elsewhere online? Or what sort of motivated you, or what motivations did you have for keeping it on Twitter for the most part?
That's a great question. Primarily, it's because it's where the community is and always has been. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think here's the thing, and you know this because you, in being in community management, and the fact that we did work with you early on in 2011 when you were with
Focus. Yep.
Right. Focus, and where we did some experimentations with your platform. It's in the social world, it's always very difficult to get first adoption and then sustaining people to come back again and again. And we did think about different platforms, and we did do some experiments, again, yours in particular that I referenced, and a few others. And we do play in the other social channels. We have, you know, a LinkedIn group and a Facebook group page. But it's really came back to, again and again, Twitter was where it's at. And what's interesting is that Twitter really started off as a communications network. Platform. It wasn't really, and it, you know, it has evolved and done so much more since then. And now with the power of the hashtag, which, by the way, I'm trying to remember where I heard it from. I think it was on this podcast I listened to called 99% Invisible, which is a podcast by Roman Mars out of Oakland, California. Anyway, I think they talked about the origin of the hashtag, or maybe it was another one. Long story short, you got to look it up. It was just a fascinating story about the hashtag, but because of the hashtags, that has what's helped create community on Twitter, the streams. And that was – so when we were creating ours, we wanted to create ours to be short and sweet enough so that you could – wouldn't take up too many characters, but that it would be memorable. It's just a branding exercise, right? And we thought Talent Culture Chat is way too long, which it is. So we said, well, let's go TC Chat. And we thought, that doesn't quite ring, but how about just T Chat? And that way you play on the TC and then – the chat. And anyway, it worked, but that's why we stayed. I mean, that's the community ebbs and flows from Twitter as the backbone. So for us, I mean, you know, if we ever wanted to try to pull folks into another platform, it might work, but you know, with this thing's been so organic for so long, we just want to let it ride and let it grow.
Let it do its thing.
Let us do its thing, yeah.
Well, I think the reason why I asked that is that there's actually quite a few people that I know of who've scoffed at the idea of using Twitter chats as an exercise in building community. And I actually think they're hugely beneficial. And I've seen a lot of really strong communities form around Twitter chats, notably T-Chat, but also Buffer Chat, if that's one that you've ever seen or participated in.
I've heard it. I've heard about it.
There's a lot out there. And so,
yeah.
I mean, are there any particular tricks that you have to be successful with using Twitter chat specifically?
I think that you keep it open. See, I think here's, and you have a much better angle on this, Katie, than I do, but my experience is that when you try to trap people in a box, that you have a much more difficult time keeping them in that box and doing stuff in that box, because we want to do what we want to do, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are more partial to other networks and LinkedIn and Facebook and Pinterest and, you know, a variety of others, right? But the fact is that if you try to put them in a box, so you want it just to be fluid and free form. So, you know, I mean, the big kids on the block that have created and have sustained and grown dramatically these communities, social networks, as we call them today, that's great. But it's very difficult to mm-hmm. get adoption quick enough and sustaining it over time and growing it over time. And it works. It works because we vary the topic every week. And it's always a topic related to the workplace, but we vary it. Mm-hmm. The guests are new and fresh every week. We do have sponsors now, which is great. And that's exciting for us. But we still have editorial content control. So we still control the, and so it's fresh every week. There's new people coming every week. There's the heart of the community that comes back every week, and they learn from one another, and they network with one another, and it's just and it works. And I think that's how, because we're consistent and we have been about dates, times, format, what they can do when they come and join us, and where they can actually access the content and information on one main site, Talent Culture, as well as the other channels, but talentculture.com. It works. Yeah. And that's why they keep coming back. Cause we try to keep it as fresh as possible, and it works.
Well, what I was obviously looking up things related to Teach Chat. And one of the things that I noticed is that there is a page on talentculture.com, and I'll link to it so that others can check it out. And it literally says, what is Teach Chat Twitter? And you, or whoever wrote it, they go very clearly into like the benefits, what people are going to learn about, how you can access, an encouragement, like, please don't try. There's a whole lot of, you know, links that are linking people to the right places. And I'm a firm believer that I think in any community, regardless what platform you're using, you have to make, a couple things. One, you have to make it easy, right? You have to really reduce those barriers to participation, which is something that, like you said, to your point, your community is already on Twitter. You're essentially just activating them. And so the barrier to participation is really, really low for you. But then the second thing is that you have to tell them what you want to do, even though the notion of a Twitter chat might seem old hat to some of us who have been on social media for a really long time and participating in different online communities. But, you know, I could imagine for the newcomers that you get jumping in, the fact that you get so many newcomers each week and then they stay active and engaged members each week, I do have to say, I think that just your very clear guidance is probably what helps facilitate quite a bit of that.
Yeah, no, it does. And I can tell you that it wasn't, you know, at the beginning, we had a handful of participants, right? I mean, and right. it kind of grew from there. But that's also because, you know, we just didn't give up. And there were times when, to be perfectly honest, you know, especially in the first 2 to 3 years, Megan and I were like, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work, and it's fun, and we love everybody and the interaction, but man, it's a lot of work. And doing, you know, I can't imagine doing a daily show like the folks at Drive Through HR do, which is another related, you know, radio or interview show that William Tincup and others participate and drive, which is great. I couldn't imagine doing it every day, and weekly was hard enough because, you know, I've had a day job for the most part, and Megan's got her own consulting firm. But I think having it on Twitter and just keeping it there and having and adding followers and I think there's a Twitter renaissance happening right now too. I don't know. I keep reading different things about how Twitter is becoming the social or network du jour now again, for whatever reason. But it's great. But you've got to invest. You've got to invest the time. And I think one of the key things, and I was just telling somebody about this the other day, that makes a huge difference in any kind of interaction online. It's one thing for us to talk live and to catch up. We know each other. We used to do some things together. It's great. And we're talking live, but you've got to, you know, this is to borrow Megan's phrase. You've got to humanize and personalize your brand. You got to keep it real, and you've got to engage and not just, you know, automate everything and spray and pray and do the marketing thing. Mm-hmm. You've got to really, I mean, our community comes every week because we're interacting with them.
Right.
Every week.
Right.
And we're talking with them, and we're sharing, and we're not just sharing our faves. Well, every week I make a conscious effort. If I see somebody new in the stream that I do not know, I connect with them and I share their answers to the questions that we're posing in the Twitter chat, and or retweet them or whatever every single time. I don't care if they have 2 followers or 200,000. It doesn't matter to me. That's not the point. The point is that interaction that's real, that's live, that's real time, even though it's online and virtual and we don't see each other per se, we're doing it. And that to me is what was how community grows. That's the heart of it all. That's how you sustain
right
over time as well.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot to be said for just doing the work. You know, I think when a lot of brands and even new community managers, to an extent, they want to go out and they want to start these communities, and they want to, in like 2 months, have it be this big thriving thing. And the fact of the matter is that it takes time to get there. I mean, you just said you've been doing TeachChat 4.5, almost 5 years now, and it takes a long time to build up that repetition and that consistency. And sometimes it's just the smallest things that you have to focus on and you do really, really well. And that's what can build some of the best communities. I have a question that just popped into my head. I didn't send it to you earlier, but related to content. So I know you had introduced the radio show after about a year, but there's tons of different, you know, events and different types of content that you could have potentially done with TeachChat, aside from if you wanted to build forums or do more with blogging or do more with, you know, interviews or whatever. Like there were probably, I'm sure, opportunities all along the line the last few years to get yourself to a point where you could have essentially like taken it up a notch or taken it in a different direction. And were you ever, I guess, tempted? I don't know that tempted is the right word, but did you ever consider doing anything else, or were you guys, was it more of a resource issue of where you just were like, we're going to focus just on the Twitter chat and the radio show and call it a day? Or I think actually part of the simplicity of it is what makes it so magical as well. So I'm just curious to know if any other ideas ever came into your head.
Well, there have been, and there's one that we do leverage now, although it's for pre-recorded promotional sake for the show, which is video, which I'll come back to in a sec. But when we first, so we experimented early on with kind of like the talk show format with you in focus, and it was great, and it was, but what we found was that it wasn't the platform that was the issue. It was we had way too many guests on, number one.
Yep.
Way too many guests, and it was too long. I mean, an hour, I mean, it's too long. I mean, we keep doing webinars that are an hour long, and attendance is now 25% live attendance for webinars. It's an on-demand world, right? People want to consume when they want to consume it. So when we first combined, when we launched the radio show again, which was actually the Blog Talk Radio version as it sits now was in 2012, November. It was a separate day. And that's great, but we just found that there's not really live. I mean, it's a podcast too, which is really where you get a longer tail of consumption, because people want to listen to it when they want to listen to it. Like I do, I listen to my podcast, and I'm sure if you do the same.
Right.
It's on demand. I don't listen to NPR live. I listen to my podcasts. Right. So, and that's just my preference. And that's, we're getting more of that kind of consumable world, but that hour is too long. So we had, and when we put them together, it was an hour and a half. So it was an hour Twitter chat
fronted by
the radio show. It's just too long still. It's a long time to ask people to sit and be with you. Right.
Right.
So by collapsing it, there is a decent live audience that listens in and starts tweeting early on. But then the bulk of everybody else comes in for 30 minutes on the Twitter chat and plays there. That's a much easier time, you know, 30 to 60 minutes max, but 30 minutes really, that's, you know, you start, that's really a good time frame. So fast forward then, last year we started thinking, wow, should we do something with Google Hangouts? Because there's people who do those, and that's not anything new, right? There's panel discussions and interviews and different things, and it just, we kind of thought about it, and we didn't have either the resources and the drive to pull that off. But what we did add, we just said, you know what, I was really somebody who really wanted to add some component of video. We've got We've got the Twitter. We've got the text-based chat, right? We've got the audio. We've got the podcast and the radio show. Now let's add – get some video in it. And so – and we had other people helping us with this at first where we would do a Skype video interview with the guests before the show and record it and then put it in and use it for promotional purposes, right? Put it in the post, the preview article that – is promoting the show.
Right.
That was, it was okay. And we had some, you know, we had some really great folks helping us do that, but they were all, it wasn't consistent. And we had some issues with, quality overall. And so I just said, you know what, let me do them. I'm very comfortable with the medium. And so we started doing these 10-minute preview video recordings where I would interview the guests for the upcoming show and then quickly edit it together after the fact with a little intro and an exit with the intro music that we use, a little video, a little visual. It's just easy peasy. And then now it's this thing. And now I've done dozens and dozens of these since last year. And it's a nice addition as a preview to where we're going with the show. And it's a video component. But other than that, we're trying to think of different ways on how we can improve the podcast. But otherwise, that's, I think we've got the three mediums covered for now.
Yeah, you kind of have the trifecta going on there.
Yeah.
And it's nice. I think, everyone knows everyone by their avatar that's kind of going through the Twitter feed. And you know people by your voice. But I think when you add video as that final component, it really can bring it all together. And to back to your point around humanizing the conversations and humanizing your brand, even yourself as a personal brand, that's just I think it's a really nice touch. I personally am loving video as a medium, and I think that there's so much that people can use video for in their communities, and so much of community building, especially when you think of as it relates to forums, is done related to text, right? Everything is text. Every single thing that people are doing in online communities for the most part is text. If you're lucky, sometimes people will put in an image or maybe even a poll, but for the most part, it's really relying on people's written words and that written conception. So,
another thing on video, I mean, that's why as I call it, my mothership, PeopleFluent, why we embed video now in all the different HR and recruiting stuff that we're doing, and a lot of companies have been doing. It's not anything new, but you don't have to have a Hollywood production team to do video anymore, right?
Really, so, don't.
And you really shouldn't, though. I mean, I know some companies still like to do really high production, corporate communication videos. So whatever, that's fine. But in the workplace, in the world of work, for a variety of different reasons, video, you want to keep it real.
Right.
If you're talking about recruiting somebody or, what's it like to work there. But that's why, I mean, and that's another way to see one another too. And you can do this now. Again, it's not like you're not sitting in a studio. It's not a high def quality. But when I do the video previews for Twitter chat on Skype, they're fine. It's totally fine. You get a taste of the discussion that's coming. And it is a powerful medium, very much. I mean, we know how powerful it is. I mean, you just look any of the stats that you look up about online video today, it's huge. And YouTube's not new, and
right.
I mean, these things have been around for a while, but it's just easier and easier to use them, the channels in the right way, for communications, for marketing, for whatever purpose. But that's why we added it. Now, will we ever go to a video interview show beyond the preview? Maybe. I don't know. Right now it works for what we do. So,
well, hey, if it's not broken, don't try and fix it, right?
Well, that's the whole thing. We've got a good system now, and we've got the video, then we've got the podcast, and then we've got the Twitter chat. So, there you go.
There you go. Well, one question I really wanted to ask you has to do with sort of the notion of kind of amateur community building around the concept of professional brand community building. And the more that I interview people that have these really thriving communities, the more I begin to see a pattern emerge that they're really being built by people they don't necessarily have like professional community management training. They just love this topic so much and they want to talk about it and they want to share it with other people. And then as a result, it's kind of this like infectious attitude and the communities just, you know, sort of take off on their own. And yet there have been some brands out there who've been able to replicate it. But by and large, I think that it can be tricky to do. So I'm curious to know from your perspective, both just with your experience through TeachChat and in general with your experience in business, is how do you think brands can get to that same point? Like how can they go about building these really wildly passionate groups, ideally maybe their customers or prospective customers or whoever their target audience is?
That's a wily question.
That a heavyweight.
Well, but I'll tell you, it's here. But the part of the conundrum that brands, quote unquote, have always faced and still faced to date is that it's a control issue, mm-hmm. right? So I want to control the message that goes out that goes inside that. Life is just too messy. It's not that clean.
Right.
And so the one thing that social has done is that it's forced, you know, a lot of brands to either start changing something a little bit more and having a little less control and letting things go and being transparent and all the other bingo buzzwords that we could talk about. But it's true though, but what brands need to do and ones that are doing it right. And, you know, I know my company's doing more of this. A lot of companies in our space are doing a lot of more of an HR and recruiting tech, and then just across consumer or B2B, whatever industry or space and business that you're in, you've got it. Your brand is only as powerful as the collective within. Mm. I mean, it's really, that's it. It. So if you're not, I mean, I love the fact that brands engage on social, right? So you have the avatar of, you know, I have a great quick story. A few years ago, I was trying to cancel an Adobe subscription of a PDF maker, mm-hmm. right? I was trying to cancel. I went online, couldn't figure it out. It was horrible in my own account, right? I couldn't do it. I tried to call phone tree from hell. And that's not unique to Adobe. No offense to them, but everybody, it just was the same thing, right? No matter what I did. I went on Twitter and I hit the main, like three different Adobe handles that I found, mm-hmm. right? Within an hour, it was resolved.
Got all taken care of.
It's all done. And they were very apologetic and nice. So, I mean, and everybody, companies that are owning these channels now get this. And I love the fact that there was, but I still didn't know who the people were behind the brand. And that's fine. It worked out. And, you know, again, using Megan's term, humanizing the brand is the way you want to move. But I also want to see who are the collective that make up the brand. That's what's powerful. Who are these people? So if you're empowering individuals to shine on behalf of your company across these channels, they are your best evangelist and marketing brand ambassadors. They right. always will be.
Right.
And IBM's known this for years and has been embraced this. A lot of tech companies do a better job of this. But you can't, you know, you only control so much of the message no matter what. I mean, today, if I'm looking for a job, I can do just as much research on you, the employer, as you used to be able to do on me, the candidate.
Yeah.
So I can find out stuff that you don't want me to find out at all, right? No, but I can. It wasn't that way before. I mean, you had your referral networks, yes, but not like today. I can go online and research all this stuff. So it's a power shift. But yeah, I want to know the collective behind the brand. I want to know the people and companies that understand that and get that and you know, within, you know, reason and with guidelines, I get. But very sparse guidelines, let them shine for you. I mean, right. you know, there's always, maybe there's, you know, and I think for the most part, people can and will do that for the brands that they feel jazzed about.
Yeah. And I think work generally for. People aren't going to put themselves in a compromising position and necessarily like put their employers on blast. Some people do. I mean, there's always like the outliers that end up on BuzzFeed and you're just like, what are you thinking?
Well, and they weren't thinking. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Right?
So. Exactly. But I think by and large, most people, especially if you have a workforce that is really engaged in what they do. They, you know, you're good to them. You treat them really well from an employer perspective. Then why wouldn't they behave in a way online that wouldn't positively reflect your organization? And I think guidelines are always important, but in essence, having too many guidelines, that's just the whole, you know, control thing coming down again.
Exactly.
Give people a few rules, give them training, and then let them be creative and see how they shine. I think it makes a very different impact in the world.
That at the end of the day is what makes for better marketing and sales. It does. I mean, whether you want to be promoted to or not, and it makes for better recruiting and retention.
Yeah.
All of it does. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I guess we're getting close to the end of our time here. It's gone by so quickly. Do you have any final words of advice or thoughts that you have for community managers and community builders, especially, you know, coming from your perspective of not necessarily being a day-to-day brand community manager practitioner?
Yeah, it takes time and investment to sustain and grow true community. It really, really does. And whether you're doing it, you know, I mean, I'm online, you know, all week and every day, but I'm not always, I mean, and I fully admit that I auto share what I hope to be good content. Mm-hmm. On different channels. I am not ashamed of that, but I do try to engage personally and especially in and around the week of the show, or if I'm doing, you know, other related kinds of work, webinar work for PeopleFluent or whatever the case is, that's what's key. That's why people invest their time to actually come consume this stuff and listen to your show and do the mm-hmm. Twitter chats and participate in a LinkedIn group or another community group, whatever it is. That's why they come, because there's other people that are relating to them and also share, and maybe from a completely different background, they're sharing stuff that, I mean, that's, I mean, I learn stuff every week. That's what inspires me to write the articles that I write, is mm-hmm. the stuff that I'm learning every week. And that to me is huge, but you've got to invest the time. You've got to engage them directly. And again, I know, you know, there's not any other word other than engage, because that's what it is. You have to do that. You have to say, hey, how you doing? Talk. And if it's not immediately real time, at least there's an ongoing exchange going on. But you've got to invest that time. You just don't post stuff and say, here's something really great to read. No, who cares? I can find that stuff elsewhere, right?
Right.
I can. And I know you want to share your stuff, especially if you're a branded community for whatever it is. But do more than that. Get a conversation started. Even if it's just two other people or one other person, talk about something. Don't just post and say, isn't this great? Nobody cares. People want to interact, whether they're in person or online. That's always been the heart of community.
Yeah. And regardless of, you know, industry or ecosystem or any of that, it all just, people want to interact with one another, and they want to do so authentically. So, and that's absolutely one thing that I think doesn't ever change. So, all right. Well, that is a wonderful note to wrap up on. Thank you, Kevin, so much again for being here and for sharing with us a little bit more about T-Chat. I'm going to put some links to T-Chat in the show notes, so I hope you guys go and check those out, because it's a really, really great community that I think a lot of us can learn a lot from just by keeping an eye on and participating in it. So again, show notes will be published at communitygeek.com/podcast. If you're on iTunes or Stitcher, please go ahead and leave us a review and let us know how we're doing. Thank you again, Kevin, and we will see you all next week. Take care.
Thank you.